Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, this is DJ.
And this is Ish.
And this is Season 7 of Better Let Me Tell You.
I could be ready if you're ready. Are you ready?
Ish.
To confetti?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
DJ, are you ready? Pero primos, are you ready? I don't know. No, but wait.
I was like, wait, I think I know what you're doing, but...
No. Sorry.
It didn't happen right.
Ish, can you handle it? DJ, can you handle it? Pero primos, can you handle it? I don't think they can handle it.
Woo! But they can.
I was going to let you do that woo because I can't woo and I'm not going to woo.
Why can't you woo? You can woo.
I don't woo.
You can woo. You're just, that's just one of your like things.
I don't woo.
You woo.
But you, you woo?
I'm a wooer.
How did you woo again?
Woo!
I can't do, I'm not going to do that.
You can.
Well, everybody, welcome to episode 256 of, 256, right?
Except 296.
Oh, 296.
Considering that we filmed episode 300 yesterday.
Well, no diga eso. Okay, cut. We're going to cut that out.
No, it's okay.
No. Yeah. No. You're going to cut that out.
Seriously. It's okay.
Welcome to episode 256, everyone.
296.
How are you going to tell people our production secrets?
Oh, it's okay. People know that we do things in the time machine sometimes.
But those are production secrets.
It's okay. There's no secret recipe.
What?
Exactly.
I'm talking about production.
Right, but production is one thing. A recipe is another.
Even that sounds more dramatic in Spanish. Una receta.
Una receta. Yeah, because it's the same as prescription.
Yeah. But in English, recipe and prescription are not the same thing.
Although technically a prescription is a recipe.
Yeah. So.
Oh, see now.
Okay, everybody. Wait. Welcome to episode 296 of Pero Let Me Tell You. Welcome, everyone.
I had never stopped to think about receta.
Yeah.
I'm having a moment right now.
Receta.
Receta.
Yeah.
You know, just keep saying it.
Receta. That should be a verb, recetar.
Is it?
No, it's not. I mean, I guess maybe it's... Actually, it is. It's what a pharmacist does.
Right.
Te van a recetar una receta. Wait, is recetar a verb? Pero primos, help us out.
Yeah, we need their help.
Okay, retra... No, not retras. Oh my God, this is going downhill really quick, and we're only 2 minutes into the show. Wait. No. Una retacera. Okay, that's the word I was looking for, because that's something that my grandmother used to. We used to go to retacera. That's like the textile store. Ande venden las telas.
Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, I assumed that had a name, but I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah, ande venden las telas. So,
Joanne's Fabric?
Well, yes, but the fabric stores I used to go to with my grandmother when we were kids were not
Okay.
They were dimly lit in strange shopping centers, and we used to go buy tela. So back in the 80s, when I was a kid, you know, I've shared this many times in the podcast, you know, we didn't have any money whatsoever. So my mom wouldn't really, I guess she couldn't afford to buy clothes. So my grandmother, who knew how to sew and was a seamstress, my grandmother, they would buy los moldes, like the mold, like the paper pattern things for clothes, the patterns. And I remember she would put them all out in the table. And it was like a sort of tissue paper, sort of. And I remember I would look at that and I'm like, what is she doing? And she would make clothes for my mother. And they would go and they would buy, I remember they would buy la tela en yarda.
En yarda,
which is a yard.
Oh, okay.
Quiero dos yarda. And for some reason, she used to make a lot of jumpsuits for my mother.
What was in the 80s?
And it's funny because I think about that really fondly. At the time, I didn't really understand it, but I think about it really fondly that you know, in a time where, like, growing up, my parents didn't have a lot of money, my grandmother's skills of being a seamstress really came in handy. So it's like, you never know what your grandparents or what your family sort of heritage, what talents they have that in a bind, in a tough moment, can, you know, really come and help you out.
Yeah. We used to do, my grandmother, my mom, actually, for Halloween, used to do the simplicity patterns. To like do the costumes.
For Halloween.
Well, yeah.
No.
But what I'm saying, I'm familiar with the patterns.
My mom used to do them for like weddings and.
Oh, that's awesome though.
Yeah. And then my grandmother used to make these dresses for my mom. She would wear them to weddings and all that, and they would end up in Cuba.
Yes, you said that before.
Then years later, like when they would send us pictures of our family in Cuba, I'm like, that dress looks familiar. It's like, mama.
Well, look, you know what? That just tells me that your family was upcycling before it was a thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think all Latin people upcycle. That's true. I mean, listen, you know how they always talk about going green? I mean, this is a meme that, you know, you've seen a bunch of times online. But it's true. Latin people are the ones that when we go to Publix or whatever supermarket, those little plastic bags, we don't throw that shit away. Eso resuelve.
Hell yeah.
You know, you could use it for trash. You could use it to pick up stuff. You could use it as your lunch bag.
To put mangoes.
When you're picking out weeds, you know, to get those mangoes and los avocados. I mean, you want to talk about a versatile, multi-purpose.
La ropa mojada después que vas a la playa y te cambia.
Claro que sí, para que no moje el carro.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we were upcycling before upcycling was a thing. We really were.
We are trendsetters is the moral of the story.
But what's it saying that necessity is a mother of invention?
Yep.
You know, a lot of these things we would do because it was cost effective. We were saving money. But now you think about it and it's like, oh, damn, we were.
Bueno, pero si the other day here, we brought something for the ping pong boy or whatever. And it was like my instinct always after we take it out of the plastic bag is to like do the little wrap up thing and put it away. And you're like, does everybody just know how to do that?
Right. But your wrap ups are like tight.
Well, yes, because that way you can pack more of them.
Sometimes when I use them, because I use them a lot to clean up dog poop. Another thing you could use
there
it
you
for.
Go.
You know what? I have never bought those little dog poop things at the supermarket to pick up the dog poop. I just take bags, plastic bags.
Why would you pay?
And even when I've taken the dogs out to like the park or whatever, I just take plastic bags in my pocket. You see all these people with like the little thing that hangs from the leash, like the little bone that has the little bags inside. I don't do that.
Eso es gasto de dinero total para coger mierda.
Pero ya, nosotros íbamos a la retacera.
La retacera.
La retacera. You know, it's really, like, again, it's just stuff that you think back. Just what your family does to survive, you know, in the whole, like, immigrant experience, I guess, especially in the first few years. I remember being a kid, and again, my grandmother knew how to sew, that to make extra money, her and my mom at night would at the house sew shoulder pads. Yeah.
Like into like
no, they jackets? Would make shoulder pads. They would make shoulder pads. And it was somebody que tenía una factoría and they needed shoulder pads. And my grandmother, my mom would make the shoulder pads. Porque we had sewing machines in the house.
I never would have thought of that as like a hustle. You know what I mean? The shoulder pads.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them wound up with Joan Collins.
It was the late 80s.
Okay.
I remember. So it must have been the late 80s. I wouldn't have remembered the early 80s. Okay. But, shoulder pads were still in the late 80s,
no? Yeah.
But yeah, they used to do shoulder pads.
Yes, when women wanted to wear heels but also look like a linebacker. And it was great
because then my mom had a second job and so did my grandmother, pero estaban en la casa conmigo.
Well, claro.
There was a moment between my dad and my mom and my grandmother. They had like 10 jobs.
Oh my goodness.
My dad had 3.
Wow.
Well, my dad had 3 until I was about 12 years old. Mm-hmm. My mom had 1.5 because she would clean houses and then at night she would do things like that with my grandmother. My grandmother worked in una factoría. Until she retired.
Right.
And then even after she retired, she still did little projects like that. So between the three of them, they had like, I don't know.
Coño, wow, yeah.
Yeah, they were like, what's the name of the busy rabbit in Peppa Pig? Is it the rabbit? The one that has all the jobs.
I think she's a rabbit. I think she's a rabbit.
She has all the jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, you know, that's my family story, but I'm sure all of us, we have similar family stories. So listeners, what are your family stories? Did your parents and did your grandparents have like 20 jobs?
You know, your grandmother was sewing shoulder pads. Maybe somebody was putting the plastic on the end of shoelaces, you know, out there. Yeah. All those things you don't think about.
You know what? Actually, I didn't think we were going to talk about this. I didn't realize this is the segment of the show that we don't script. Well, we don't script any of it. But, you know, this sort of reminds me of something you said the other day that I thought was very moving. And you sort of said it in a moment kind of frustration. But then after I sort of thought about it, because, you know, it's not a secret to people who know us. We're trying to sort of in a crossroads right now as to where we're going to take Ping Pong Boyo. We definitely want to take the next step with Ping Pong Boyo. We're just not sure what it is yet, whether it would be like a food truck or a brick and mortar. We're still trying to figure it out. But you said something the other day that I thought was very sort of inspiring. So I don't know if I think you know what it
I think I, mean, I know. I think I know what you're referencing.
You know, in terms of your grandfather. Yeah, so, you know, you might want to share it. I thought it was very nice.
Again, like you said, it's no secret to anybody who knows us. I'm at a specifically, I'll speak for myself. You know, I'm at a point right now where it's like, I don't know. I'm 45 and I almost 45 now in August, and I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up, right? Is like the joke.
How did you and I go to school together? I'm so much younger than you.
Well, you were very advanced.
Yeah, that's what it was.
You were very advanced. Yeah. You were actually reading in the womb.
I was.
Yes. So. It's weird. There was actually some sonograms I saw where you had hieroglyphics.
Yeah. Well, go on with your story.
So, you know, but it's that. And I think everybody kind of goes through this period to a degree, varying degrees and at different parts in their life. And, you know, like you mentioned, we're looking at the whole Ping Pong Boyo. And I had a realization that, you know, if my grandparents could come to this country with very limited means, no mastery of the language, and were able to montar un negocio, and I don't know why I just said that in Spanish. It felt right? Montar un negocio, like, you know, they opened up an auto shop, you know, a taller. Obviously, it wasn't like right when they got to this country, but they opened their own business. And that's what my grandparents retired from, their own business, without being born in this country, without having mastery of the English language, with none of that. And that was what my mother and my uncle, that's what put food on the table. That's what bought them a house. They had a boat. They had at one point a trailer. They, you know, my sister and I were never, every time we wanted to go to Disney on Ice or whatever, like there was always money to do things, right? You know, they weren't multimillionaires, but they didn't just survive. They were able to do things, right? If they were able to do that, you know what? We can too. We can absolutely do it because we have so many more advantages, which is what they want for us, right? That's the reason you and I are in this country, is because they wanted us to have those opportunities. And it's like, you know what? Fuck yeah, we can open up a if we want to, we can open a brick and mortar. If we want to, we can do a food truck. If we like we can do this because God knows between the two of us, we have degrees, we have mastery of the language. You know, and we understand how this country works from the get-go. Nobody's, you know, we don't have to learn. So it was that aha moment in my head where I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I can just go off and quote-unquote do my own thing, and it can work. It can also fail spectacularly, but it can work.
but you can do it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that when we look back on you know, our grandparents and our parents to varying degrees. Obviously, my parents came to this country very young, so it's very different when I look at my parents. I use my grandparents as the barometer more so. You know, we many times forget that if they did it, and yes, it was a different time, but if they did it, you know what? So can we. And I said this many times, like, we are also here in a way to like make good and fulfill on that promise, for lack of a better word, you know, that they wanted for their families.
Yeah, and I think that is something that is uniquely special and uniquely the hustle that we talk about of the immigrant experience, that, you know, you come here with nothing. You have so much to do, so much to prove, so much to prove to yourself, to your family, to everybody, so much you have to accomplish because you don't have a choice. And, you know, a lot of people that immigrate come with family, with kids and with responsibilities and things like that, that you don't have time to dream. You just got to get to it.
Get shit done.
And, you know, I think sometimes, you know, when you're the first generation, either you were born here or you know, like me, that I came when I was a year old, that we were raised with all these, you know, privileges compared to them, right? Because I was not raised in any privilege, but compared to them, you know, I was in the lap of luxury, you know?
Right, yeah.
Right? I would get shoes once a year. Like, from the store. No, they didn't have to send them in the mail.
Right.
But from also, another country. But anyway, I think sometimes we lose track of that. And when things don't go our way, we're very quick to be like, oh, woe is me. And, oh, I'm so unlucky. And it's like, you know, our grandparents, our parents, they didn't have time to sit there and be like, oh, we're so unlucky. No, they were working and they were trying to, whatever that meant, whether it was starting their own business or doing their own thing or having multiple jobs. And I think that that's something that sometimes is lost in the first and second generations. And we have to, I think it's important for us, in order to, you know, honor them and sort of keep their work and their trajectory, you know, alive in a way, is to remember that when we feel overwhelmed or like things aren't going our way, that go, you know, maybe things aren't going our way and maybe, you know, we got we had a bad day or a bad moment or a bad year, but you know, what they went through was so much more intense and so much harder, and yet they made it work. I've said the story, I believe I have, here on the show about my paternal grandmother, my abuela Caridad, and my dad's mom. And, you know, I was very, very fortunate. I had two amazing grandmothers, like, oh, just incredible. But my paternal grandmother was, I mean, I've said her story. She was quite the fighter.
Hell of a woman.
You know, my grandparents left Cuba, not my paternal ones, not too long after the revolution. And they had an infant, my uncle. He was an infant. And they were able to leave Cuba right after the revolution, but she left behind five adult children. Yeah, she had un niño de la vejez, as we call it. That's why my uncle, my dad's youngest brother, is so much younger than everybody else.
I always forget that.
His siblings can be his parent, almost. But she had to leave five adult children behind. And, you know, those were the sacrifices and that many people from Cuba and all over the world that have immigrated have done. They've had to make those sacrifices of leaving loved ones and family behind. And when my grandmother got here to the United States, like everybody, she didn't speak the language. In the early 60s, there wasn't a sense of community. Like, even when my parents got here in the 80s, there was already a community, right? In the 60s, there wasn't that sense of community and resources for the community that you can rely on or seek help in. And that woman became a freaking fighter. She, without the language, without anything, she started writing to senators, meeting with senators. She went to Tallahassee. She went to D.C. To get humanitarian visas for all their kids. And it took her a while. It took over a decade. But she was able to bring all her kids, their spouses, their children, and my other grandmother.
Okay. It took a decade, but it was five grown children.
Yeah.
That's 2 years per kid.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
Like, look at the look
you,
at
you know what's break funny? It down that you know way. What's funny? That like years later, I mean, I was in my 30s. I was like, okay, I understand how my grandmother, with my dad's mom, was mm-hmm. able to claim her children and their spouses and grandkids, but how did my other grandmother get stuck in that mix? Like, I mean, of course, I was thrilled that I had Mima with me, you know, my other grandmother, but I'm like, how did that mix happen? She's like, oh, because all along she was applying for a special humanitarian visa for her. And I was like, what a freaking rock star, yeah. You know? And I'm, you know, that's the story of my family, but I'm sure all of you out there have similar stories of people in your family, ordinary people that when the time comes do extraordinary things. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that is very unique to the immigrant, you know, mindset, especially back in that time, that it's like, I think that because I can't speak on all countries because each country has a different issue. But I think with Cuba, it's just that they went through so much trauma and they lost everything that when you have nothing left, you don't have much to lose. So it's
take like, that gamble.
So it's like,
fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vamos para adelante.
What's it say? En no ya lo tengo.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to do any worse.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, yeah. Well, whatever.
Fuck it, I'll ask.
The only thing is that your grandfather, well, maybe he did have to get a grease trap. See, I don't tie in. A different type of grease trap.
Yeah, different. There was lots of oil. There was lots of oil at the tie in. That is because, true.
You know, with that, us trying to venture into restaurants, we're just mortally afraid of grease traps and getting a grease trap approved and derm and the licenses and all that.
But I love that, though, whenever you and I talk about this.
It's always a grease trap.
We never talk about, like, la licencia, oh, payroll. No, all it's of that is trap. The grease trap.
And when we talk to people who've opened restaurants, what do they tell us?
The grease trap.
Grease trap.
So our fears are good to have.
You know, I told you, you know, when I learned about the grease trap, because, you know, my office, you know, I had every like small restaurant in Hialeah would come to my office. I can't tell you, it was probably like maybe a dozen people throughout 10, 12 years that came to the office or would come to the office and they had problems with their grease trap. And, you know, the first time I was like, okay, well, it was a grease trap. And then the second time, okay, a coincidence. But then after a while, I'm like, is the grease trap a problem? Like, I think it's a thing, and it is within the restaurant industry.
The grease trap is worse than the nothing in the never-ending story.
Anyway, speaking of trash, so this week, I want to talk really quickly about a video that went viral this past week that just, I think, pissed everybody off. I don't know how viral it went in terms of the algorithm outside of Florida, but here in Florida, especially in South Florida, there's a video that went viral of these. I mean, this is a terrible human beings, just reckless, that they were going out on their boat and they threw out, and this was caught perfectly by a drone. They threw out not one, but two huge trash cans. Filled with trash, with cans and stuff, they threw it out on the bay.
Yeah, into the ocean.
With no shame. Like, and it wasn't like they threw a can. Even that is messed up, but it's not like they threw a can.
Like,
right?
Oh shit, it fell out of my hands.
Right.
Right.
No, this was two huge trash cans filled with trash and cans, and they threw it in the bay. And the drone caught it in every angle in 8K. Like, it was perfectly captured. And I don't know what's happened to them, but they already knew the identity in order.
They found them.
I don't know what's happened to them, but remember, because the drone has such high definition, they were able to get the number from the boat, the registration number, right? So they were able to trace who had, you know, the owner of the boat and all that. So I don't know legally what's happened yet, but I mean, for those of you who saw that video, that is just awful. I mean, how reckless can you be to do that?
I, you know, when I see shit like that, it first of all, it pisses me off to no end, and not just because I fear the wrath of Louis Aguirre, but it, like, what goes through your mind, right? What goes through your mind to do something like that? Because, like I said, look, it's not that it makes it better, but look, we've all been in a situation where we're holding something. I sick Iona mud, you know, like a piece of paper, or you know, look, that's clearly an accident, and it sucks, right? You should have been more careful, etc. But these people, I mean, were deliberately not giving. You want to talk about zero fucks given, right? Like, they were just like, do 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 do. This is as good a place as any to just dump this garbage. Like, What makes you think that's okay? That's my question that I would love to just... out of everything, I would just love to ask that question. What made you think that was okay to do?
They're partying, bro.
Yeah, well, you know what? Next time, throw yourself off the boat.
And you know what? Now Andrew Odasso is going to have to go and clean this shit up.
I mean...
That's why, Andrew, we need you.
We need you.
Andrew Odasso, not Andrew the Hurricane. That's why we need you, Andrew. I mean, again, you know, we're all young. We've all done stupid, reckless things that we're kind of like, shit, what the hell was I doing? But, you know, never in my...
But that's not reckless. That's purposeful.
Yeah, never in my youth, in my early 20s, I'd say, would I have done that?
No.
Because that's just...
That's what I mean. Que cabeza cabe.
Yeah, it's just terrible. Something I wanted to mention here, because we've gotten a few messages, and I've gotten a few messages, and there's been a lot of people that have DM'd me and all that, asking us or mentioning not only what's going on with Palestine, you know, and the Gaza issue, and you know, specifically what's going on with campus.
The campus protest.
And we said early on, and we're sticking to that, that our audience comes to, you know, have a good time with us and laugh. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world, and there's a lot of content and a lot of sources where you can get this information. So, you know, we're sort of an escape to that. It doesn't mean that we don't, you know, we're blind to it, or we're purposely avoiding it. We're not, we're just, we understand what our purpose is and what our demographic is and what our audience and our Pedro Primos like to hear in us. So we're not going to dive into these deep, complicated debates and conversations about this.
There are better versed people than us.
We're not going to. What I will say is this, particularly to the campus protests. And this is, I'll keep it very short, you know, and I'll use my legal training for this. Protest is one of the things that has, you know, is very unique to, especially predominantly to the American experience, in terms that it's protected to the Constitution. We really do have a right to peaceful protest. That's a right that is very much an identity of our country. And when we look at the history of the U.S., a lot of times the greatest advancements that have happened socially have been because of protests. And it's something that we should believe in as Americans. It's something that I and myself have partaken many times. We joke sometimes that I'm a professional protester.
Darian loves a march.
I've protested for LGBT rights. I've protested for women's rights. I've protested for, you know, racial unity, racial division, racial injustice. I wrote, protested in the George Floyd protest. I mean, I'm for March for Our Lives against gun violence. I'm a professional protest. I do practice what I preach. And what we've seen in this past week, or these past couple of weeks, with these college protests have been on both ends of the spectrum. I do think that there have been protests where students were unfairly targeted. And I do think that there were times that maybe the police was called and authorities were called and they didn't need to. I also think that there are times that they absolutely needed to be called. That protest got violent and they became a nuisance, really, to people around them. So, you know, sometimes what you see in the media is very conflicting because they show you a certain angle of it. So I think that we, with this spectrum of the different protests that have been happening, you know, whether you agree with it or not, it doesn't matter what side you are in this. I think, you know, I really looked at these things and I tried to really apply my legal understanding and legal training in it. And I saw both. I saw people that were, you know, peacefully protesting. Again, whether you agree with them or not, they were exercising their First Amendment rights to peaceful protest, where maybe the police should have not been called or the authorities should have not been called. And then I saw, especially, you know, something like Columbia University, where things just got out of hand. They barricaded buildings. There was destruction. And, you know, what a lot of people maybe don't understand, just like a lot of people don't understand, or they apply freedom of speech incorrectly. The right to protest is also similar. You know, there is ample Supreme Court cases and Supreme Court law that states that, you know, there are boundaries to protesting.
Yes.
You know, a time and place. You know, you can try to protest in location A, and they tell you, no, you can't protest in location A. You have to protest in location B from 7 to 10 p.m. And that is completely legal. So without getting too into it, I saw both of those things happening this week. Mm-hmm. So I think that just goes to show you the complexity of this matter, that it's multi-layered. And, you know, there's a million places where you can get content for this and right. you could see what you want to see, what you don't want to see. But we've decided that we're not going to, this is not something that we're going to go on the deep end of because it's not our brand. You know, and we have gotten political here in the past, and I'm not saying we won't again, but that's not what you guys come into tune for. And I understand that the world is very heavy right now. So if we could provide an hour of laughter, of fun, of levity, of stupid commentary or listening commentary, as I like to say, listen, laugh, and learn. That's, you know, we understand that that's our purpose, and that's what we try to do. So, you know, we're not going to go too deep into that.
Not going to bog it down. I will just kind of put a little capper in there. It's like, you know what? I'm a firm believer in the right to protest, just not at the expense of other people's safety. Yeah. And that's my whole, like, that's just a blanket statement on my behalf.
It's complicated.
You know, it's well, but I mean, because you just because somebody's not protesting with you doesn't mean they don't believe what you believe, and now you might be attacking somebody who, you know what I mean? It's just like you can protest, but just don't infringe on the other person's rights.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, yeah, I mean, protests are supposed to be uncomfortable, right? That's right. The way it's a protest, but there is actually constitutionally limits to protesting.
Right.
And again, I saw both of that happening this week. You know, protests that were peaceful, that the police was called, that didn't need to be called. So you can say that those were situations where people were legally exercising their rights to protest and they were threatened with, you know, arrests and with police. But then I saw a lot of instances where that wasn't the case. They were not peaceful protests. There were practically riots, you know, barricading, property destruction. That is not necessarily constitutionally protected. And there is ample case law on that, but
right.
It is what it is. So,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Moving on.
So this week is, I think, the Met Gala, right?
Yes. It's okay. The first Monday of May.
I've always said I'm one of these people. I don't know about the Met Gala. I see the Met Gala because when the Met Gala happens, it's bombarded in every form of media. So you just know. I mean, you just know about it. But I'm a cynic when it comes to the Met Gala. I sort of see these pictures and I sort of laugh at the ridiculous of it all. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but I believe it's a fundraiser.
It is, but it's...
But I will actually reference what you just said, right? Where it's like, it is a certain degree of ridiculousness, but using what you were just saying, when people come listen to us, right? It's nice to have that one day where it's like, you know what? Let's just all be frivolous for a couple of hours.
Well, actually, that's sort of where I was going at.
Yeah.
You know, in a time like this, that there's so many really big problems in the world is falling apart, you know? is an event like the tone the Met Gala, is it tone deaf to have this? Because the Met Gala is 100% frivolous. Let's not pretend.
Of course,
yes, there is charity, and I mean the charity is the costume. What is it?
I think it's like the costume designer organization, which, a museum.
Listen, I'm all about curating and I'm all about history, yeah, and keeping things in museums and all that. So I'm sure there's I have no doubt that there is very important relevance in right. what this fundraiser is for. But it's not like this is a fundraiser for, you know, starving kids, right? Or you know
fair,
what I mean?
Fair.
So, I mean, I know that the world can't stop when there is an issue, right? But do you sometimes feel that, like, man, this is like the most frivolous, sort of ridiculous thing that is millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, and the world is falling apart, right?
I don't, because I think that if we follow that thought all the way down, right, then don't have a prom that's frivolous, don't do a baby shower that's frivolous, don't, like, you know what I mean, if you're gonna start applying, like, there's so many problems in the world, and to celebrate anything and to have any type of fun is tone deaf. It's like,
no, we don't want to do that because we have a very good friend who's an event planner, right? we don't want to take away her business away from her,
right? But you see what I'm saying, right? It's a rabbit hole situation, right? Because then where does it end?
I'm not saying they shouldn't. I just for conversation.
Yeah. But that's the thing. If you take that stance of like, no, because happiness is tone deaf at a time like this, it's like, well, then, you know, tirate por un puente. I mean, like what do you?
happiness is tone deaf when the world is falling apart. Tirate por un puente. Even that sounds better in Spanish, right?
It sounds poetic almost.
I mean, when you say in English, dude, jump off a bridge. But in Spanish, it's like, dude, tírate de un puente.
Right.
It just sounds better. Tírate de un puente.
Yeah, it's very definitive.
Oh, no, I hope that's not insensitive to anybody who's lost a loved one who jumped off a bridge.
I mean, we're all about mental health.
Did you ever see that documentary, The Bridge, about people who jump off the Golden Gate Bridge?
No.
Yeah, there was a documentary maybe about 10 years ago about people who jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. And the way they filmed it was that there was the documentarian. He placed a bunch of cameras unbeknownst to the Golden Gate Bridge authority and all that throughout the Golden Gate Bridge. So he had footage of multiple. You've never heard about this?
No.
He had footage of multiple angles of the Golden Gate Bridge. And in a year or whatever amount of time he had the cameras going, he captured a lot of suicides.
Okay, so I'm going to amend my statement. No te tira por un puente, enciérrate en un cuarto.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. We're going to amend.
And yeah, you never heard about this?
No.
Yeah, and he interviewed the families of loved ones that had died from suicide from the Golden Gate Bridge. He interviewed people that had survived the fall. Mm-hmm. And I think, not as a result of the documentary, but I could be wrong, but I think they did put a net.
Oh, okay.
Suicide prevention net on the Golden Gate Bridge. It was very... You know what? I have to tell you that... I remember when I saw the movie, it starts very subtle, mm-hmm. right? It starts with like an image of the Golden Gate Bridge where you could see both towers. And it's a very picturesque, very beautiful image.
Whoa, yeah.
So the image is, you know, it's a live image and it's very serene, sort of, because right. you could hear the wind and sort of the trees flowing. And maybe like a minute into the scene, again, it's like a sort of frozen picture, although it's not, it's live. You see a little poof, and it's somebody who had jumped. And it creeps up on you because you're here looking at the pretty image of the Golden Gate Bridge. And
far away.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you see a little poof, in the water and it's somebody who had jumped. And that's when you're like, oh my God, that was a life. It's a really hard documentary to watch. Well, this took a turn.
This took a turn. I mean, I have some more, like, you know, uplifting things to talk about.
Well, actually,
yeah.
One of our sponsors is BetterHelp.
This is true. So if you need it, again, I know we toss that out frivolously, but again, it's just one of those things where it's like it's a saying in Spanish that you toss out without the thought of, like, what it means. And I don't know if that's a language disconnect we have, you know, because I would never say anybody throw yourself off a bridge, but I would say directa por un puente.
Yeah. In, like, in Spanish, it's more dramatic.
Right. It's everything almost telenovela.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Spanish, everything is more dramatic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's where in our brains, it's like, well, no, we're just being melodramatic, you know? Yeah.
Like people are so it's so melodramatic, it's so eerie and dark,
and we just toss it off like nothing.
Yeah,
no big.
Okay, let's move on.
That's moving on. Moving on. All right. Do you have another topic, or
I have many, but you could go.
You have many.
Well, I wouldn't say many, but you know.
Okay. Well, but you have topics. All right. So I wanted to bring something up.
You know who I don't like?
Who don't you like?
It took me like 30 some years to realize this. You know whose music I don't like?
Who do you?
I don't like Billy Idol.
Okay, if you didn't take me a minute, it took me a minute. I'm like, Billy, I'm like, no, wait, not Joel, not Eilish, Idol. Okay, yes.
I love Billy Joel, but
I had to make my way down the list. Man,
I love Billy Joel. Scenes from an Italian Restaurant, that's my song. Always a Woman. Anyway, I don't like Billy Idol. Money is a terrible song.
Okay, how about Eyes Without a Face?
No.
White Wedding?
No.
I think that's it. Rebel Yell?
No. No, I don't like any of them.
Okay, I think that's all the Billy Idol songs.
You know, the Eyes Without a Face, I think I would have liked if it was sung like by Heart. Right? Because Heart, I mean, for those of you who remember Heart from the 80s, well, Heart still records tours. Yeah. I mean, she has an incredible voice.
Yep.
Incredible voice. Yep. And they just make everything sound good. But the thing with Heart, Eyes Without a Face, I think that even lyrically and musically, I don't hate it, but I just don't like Billy Idol. So it's like...
So therefore?
Eyes Without a Face. I don't like it. I mean, I wouldn't put him up there that I dislike him as much as I dislike JoJo Siwa singing.
Okay.
I mean, it's not there. But then again, I just thought this was really random. So a few years ago, Perobri listeners, we went to Vegas. Actually, it was for your birthday. We went to Vegas, like all of our friends, we went to Vegas, and it was sort of like a last hurrah before the pandemic.
It was 2019.
By world before pandemic. And one of our very good friends, she's like, oh, I'm going to bring a friend of mine. Another friend of mine. And we were like, okay, sure. The more the merrier. But we didn't realize, okay, so the girl comes and...
She was lovely.
She was great. She was great. And Americana. So there was a little bit of a different dynamic, a different vibe there. I think she probably was like, what the hell's wrong with all these people? But that's fine. It's not the first time we got that. And then I remember one night she was talking about how she's like the world's biggest Billy Idol fan. And I was like, what? Like, how is anybody the world's biggest Billy Idol fan? I mean, you do you. I mean, listen, you do you. But I'm like, really? Like, Billy Idol? Like,
that's very specific.
Yeah.
Like, very specific.
Yeah. Like, you go. Like, you go. But I'm like, really? Billy Idol? But then I'm like, oh.
That's where the culture comes in. Yes, 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 yes.
And I think she had even said that there's like conventions or like...
Well, she had been to see him I don't know how many times.
Yeah, and I was like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
I mean, IdolCon.
There's an IdolCon? No,
I'm making it up.
It sounds great, though.
I'd go. Maybe. For free. If I wasn't busy.
So, they should have used Eyes Without a Face in the Spanish movie with that thing with the hands.
Pan's Labyrinth.
La cosa esa que tiene los ojos en las manos. What was that thing called?
Pale Man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the Pale Man.
Okay, wait, no. Yeah. I have the nombre confundido. What is the name of the kangaroo? Okay, where's the kangaroo from? Okay, I'm doing this live while we're recording. From chocolate. There's a kangaroo. There's a kangaroo that's in
Tartuffe,
Pantouf?
Something oof.
Oof.
Something oof.
Okay, you listener, do you know what we're talking about?
Yes, like, chocolate with Julia Binoche and Johnny Depp. Yeah, yeah.
There's an imaginary kangaroo.
Yes.
messed up? The most I remember of that movie is the kangaroo that ever came out. When you tell me, and I remember that I liked that movie, I'm not going to talk. It's not even the cast. Did they have a love affair? I guess they did.
Probably, yeah.
Right? Not even the chocolate, because I do remember there was chocolate, right? What I think about is the imaginary Kangaroo, that doesn't come out. Pantouf. It's pantouf.
It's pantouf. I know it was something oof.
Oof, yeah.
Something oof.
Yeah. But Pan's Labyrinth, that monster didn't have a...
He's
eyes without a face.
His eyes were on his hands.
And here.
Yeah. Pale Man. Oh,
yeah.
That movie's so good. I don't even know what the hell I was going to bring up. But so you said that's where culturally different, right? Yes. So I wanted to bring something up today.
That's culturally different?
It's culture now for something brand new. On the show we talked before about like cultural appropriation and what it is and what it isn't and how we feel. You know, sometimes, you know, people may be like, oh, it's cultural appropriation. But like if we see somebody wearing a guayabera, we're like, cool, right. You appreciate, you know, you're down with us or whatever, right? So this week, your favorite person that you saw in person and didn't know it was him until I told you, Darren Criss.
Oh, yes. Do our Beto Primos know that story?
I think we've said it, but I'll...
We were in like Marie Callender's...
Marie's Crisis. We were not getting a pie.
I mean, I would have been happier getting a pie.
I'm sure, you know what? No, you wouldn't have been, because you like being put in those situations that you're not comfortable
I'm
in.
I'm feeling out of my element.
Yes.
Boy, was I out of my element. Yeah.
So my last night in New York, he had gone up to help me move back, and we went to go see the On Your Feet, the Gloria and Emilio, which, you know, unbeknownst to us, we would later meet the star of, Ana Villafañe. And afterwards, I was like, you know what? I just want to go for one last hurrah to Marie's Crisis, which is a piano bar. It's like the size of the room that we record in, almost. But it's a Broadway piano bar, right? And they do musical numbers and all that. But it gets super duper packed. So that's so not Darian's thing. As you could
imagine, I'm out of my element. I don't like show tunes. They annoy me. Like, I want to go set myself on fire. I'm like... And here
but it's my last night in New York, so you can't say no.
So it was all about you. And we wanted it to be about you.
Yes.
So I'm like, this is what friendship means. Friendship means that I'm going to go to this bar where they sing show tunes, and I'm just going to, I don't know,
sit there.
Count the popcorn ceiling.
Right, because he's not even going to have a drink. No. Right. So we go there, whatever, we sit there, and again, it gets packed. This place always gets packed. It's, again, the size of like a walk-in closet almost. And... as we're sitting there, he leans into me and he's like, that looks like the guy from Glee. And I'm like, well, that's because it is Darren Criss.
It is
him. Yeah, he's always there. It's actually very well known.
I'm Marie Callender's. Sing show tunes and get a delicious Dutch apple pie.
Well, wait a minute. Can I open this place?
I mean, it's a win-win situation. Shit,
that is up my alley on both alleys. Like, just, you know, pie and show tunes. Like, I'm in. I am in. Famous people go there all the time. Like, the last time I was up there, actually, with Stephanie from Mamas and Merlot.
Yeah, that would totally be her
song. We had a great time, and Zachary Quinto was there.
Oh, okay, so it's just a thing. You're going to see a celebrity.
You might see a celebrity in there, right? Especially if you go, like, during the week. If you go on the weekend, maybe not. He was there, and it was a good time. But... so this week, Darren Criss was at a Chicago Comic Con, speaking of another thing that you enjoy that you're out of your element, because he's voicing, I think he voices Superman in the new movies, the animated movies, whatever. So he said something to the effect of, I have been so culturally queer my whole life. Mm-hmm. Now, Darren Criss identifies as straight, but he obviously has played a lot of gay characters in the past. You know, on Glee, he played Andrew Cunanan. And what he was meaning to say was, you know, he grew up in San Francisco at, you know, the late 90s. Mm-hmm. So in the height of the AIDS crisis, surrounded by gay men and the gay culture and et cetera and so on and so forth. And, you know, it got me to thinking, and there's been some degree of backlash to him saying it as well. I understand where he's coming from, though, when he says something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I started to think, like, and the first example that actually came to my mind was Eminem. Mm-hmm. Right? Eminem is white, but Eminem grew up on 8 Mile. Eminem grew up in what could be described as predominantly black neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And I think... well, I don't think Eminem has ever gone out of his way to say, hi, I'm Eminem and I'm black, or culturally black. But I think... you can see that in his...
it's part of his... It's part of his culture insofar that that's what he grew up in.
That's what he grew up with. And then I started thinking about, you know, when down here in Miami, I was actually thinking about one person specifically who, you know, was Americano, that we went to middle school and high school with. Mm-hmm. But to this day, like, when I see him post things, he'll be posting about, like, you know, oh my God, I need my cafecito, or like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, or like, oh, I miss croquetas or whatever, this and that. And it's like, he is white, white, white. You know what I mean? Like, he's
even
white.
The name is, you
yeah,
know.
Even the name is white. But when he does it, it's like, no, yeah, he's culturally Cuban. I mean, I in my mind, I'm like, I understand that. He's culturally
yeah.
Cuban.
Yeah.
You know, because he grew up around all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so, I mean, do you think...
He got backlash for that?
He got some backlash from it. I mean, like everybody nowadays, you know, like some op-ed pieces are saying, you know... Like it was a misguided statement that, you know, for somebody also like him.
I don't think it's misguided. I think that is his reality and that's his lived experience. And if that's what he grew up again, you know, he grew up in San Francisco, as you said, he grew up predominantly around, you know, gay and queer people. That's part of his experience, part of his growing up. So yes, he may not be quote unquote gay,
right.
But that is very much part of his fabric and who makes it right. What makes him so. He didn't say that he was queer. He said he grew up culturally queer. And, I mean, nobody can argue his lived experience and his reality. Right. It is what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, go ahead.
You know, the whole thing with cultural appropriation is that I feel that cultural appropriation is a very real thing. I do think it's a very real thing. And I think that when it's really happening, you know. Because I at the end of the day, I think cultural appropriation is when you appropriate other people's culture for your benefit, especially in profit, and you don't understand that culture, you don't know that culture, and you're doing it only for the sake of making money or advancing yourself. Mm-hmm. With that said, I think that if you grew up around a certain culture, you were inspired authentically by that culture, that is part of you.
Yeah.
Right? That is part of you. So if you later display some type of affinity or some type of appreciation for that culture, that's not cultural appropriation. That's culture. That is when I think it's cultural appreciation. And I think that nowadays with social media and all that, we're so quick to call out people to say, oh, it's cultural appropriation or, oh, you're stealing from other cultures. Yes, that does happen. And unfortunately, it does happen to some communities more than others, mm-hmm. right? But it's something that, while true, there's other times that if you were inspired and grew up around those cultures, they're also a part of you. So you can appreciate that culture and show how you were influenced by it. And I think that that's a distinction between both of those, you know, terms.
Yeah.
I've always said it here, and I mean, we've talked about it here. I remember a couple of years ago or something, there was a friend of mine, Felix, who he was in Baltimore,
Maryland.
Yes,
was he there to see the Wretched?
He went to I think the restaurant or something was called Havana Cafe or Cuba Cafe, and he went and they had tacos. Like, right. That's the type of shit that upsets me to like just so much, because I don't care if you're a white gringo from Nebraska. If you open up a Cuban restaurant and it's a legit Cuban restaurant and you know their recipes, you studied it, you know, you know about Cuban food, you know, go knock yourself out. Go and share that food and that, you know, that culinary custom to, you know, wherever you're from that maybe isn't used to it.
Yeah.
Totally okay with it.
Feel free to share my culture.
Feel free to share my culture. If you know it, you appreciate it, and you authentically know it, and you put in effort to know it, right?
Right.
But if you're going to go ahead, and obviously I'm talking about Cuban because that's my culture, but this is relevant to any culture and any nationality. But if you're opening up a Cuban restaurant and you're having tacos, you've made absolutely no effort to understand our culture, which, you know, our food, which is a huge part of our culture.
Of any
right?
culture.
Right? They put tacos, they put black beans in them, and they call it a day. And then they have a drink called Cuba Libre. Right? That's not a Cuban restaurant. No. That's an abomination, right? That's the type of crap that pisses the hell out of me. So when people get upset at that, I could understand. You know, I get upset at that. I get upset at that. You know, sometimes I sort of stop myself when I see, like, maybe, you know, somebody who's Anglo or white wearing a guayabera. You know, I'm really like, do you know the history of that guayabera? And I'm like, you know, maybe they saw it. Una guayabera, I personally do not like guayaberas. I've never worn one, but I appreciate the artistic and sort of artistry of it.
The history.
Even though it's not my thing. Man, if you ever see me in a Wyoming, I know that there's something going on in my life. There's something just off.
Is that how you're trying to tell me you've been kidnapped?
I'm wearing a baby yellow, pollito yellow. You know they have them in yellow. And like, of course they do. I'm like,
of course they do.
I'm like, you know, you do you. Oh yeah, that would be speaking of Met Gala. Can you imagine Havana Nights at the Met Gala?
Madonna would go dressed as a Russian.
She go in a kimono. I'm going in a kimono because I'm honoring the Chinatown in Havana. Because I just make up my own shit.
I realized that today, you know, the theme, this year's Met Gala, the theme is, you know, Madonna through the years. So I decided to come as Bette Midler.
Yeah. It's funny because, so Ish always laughs that, you know, again, going back to the Met Gala, you know, the Met Gala has themes every year, right? And he always laughs. He always, like, purposely looks out for Madonna because whatever the theme is, Madonna's going to go as the exact opposite. So
my favorite. The year,
and it's funny because I had never really noticed until you pointed it out to me that you're like, watch, she's gonna wear something completely, you know.
This is a woman who's made a career out of, like, you know, Christian idolatry in all of her looks. The year that it was, like, you know, Christianity through the ages, she went like a black dress.
Savannah Knights at the Met Gala took in a kimono. That would be so, her. Or like as an Eskimo. Like, she'll have like a, what is it that the Russians, that fur thing they wear?
The muff.
Yeah, so going like complete, like Dr. Zhivago style. Well, and then, you know, she'll probably say, well, I'm dressed as a Russian because Cuba, under communism.
The Soviets were a part of Cuban history, and that's why I'm here as a babushka. The scariest part of all of this is that when it happens, I'll be right yet again.
Listen, you've been right about a lot of things, but there is nothing that you will ever be more right about Nicole Kidman being Friolenta. Do you guys remember, listeners, do you remember that?
That happened live on this show.
Do you guys remember that? That was last year, listeners. Do you remember that? So let's refresh their memory a little bit.
Was it last year? Like,
it was last year. It was maybe a year or two ago. That we were, the Academy Awards were coming up or something. We were talking about the Academy Awards. And I remember I said something to the effect that the Kodak Theater, where they film, they host the Academy Awards, looks like a really cold place. Like, that has tremendo air conditioner. Yeah. You know, 5 trillion BTUs.
Like, even you'd be cold.
Yeah, even I would be cold, right? That's a high threshold, right? And you said, you know, Nicole Kidman looks...
Friolenta.
Looks like tremenda friolenta. And whatever, you said that on the record, on the show. I forgot what episode number it was. And whatever, we went on talking about it. Well, our shows drop on Friday. That Sunday, the day of the Academy Awards, there is a clear shot of Nicole Kidman wearing her husband's jacket at the Academy Awards because she was cold. I don't know how you did that. But you know what? After you mentioned it, it is true. She does look like somebody who will be Friolenta.
Yeah, because even cold feels good in a place like this.
You know that I didn't know that the AMC thing that she does is like a thing?
Oh, yeah. They're doing a sequel.
Oh, there's a sequel?
They're doing a new commercial.
I didn't know that, like, again, in LA and stuff like that, people like clap and stand up when it comes on.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you see? They sell like a little backpack purse that's like her suit.
But it's so random. Like, that's so... That was so, like, you know, we're going to decide that we're going to make this...
A thing.
Do you know what is, like, of all those, like, theater sort of interludes and all that, what's the one I remember the most?
The roller coaster?
With the
little popcorn?
Yes. No, but I'm talking about, like, the celebrity ones.
Oh. Maria Menounos, because she was on forever?
Everybody Loves Raymond. They did one. I think it was like in the first or second season of Everybody Loves Raymond that they were going to the movie theater. And Marie had manicotti in her bag. And they're like, and I think Deborah was like, Marie, you brought manicotti? It was manicotti or the other, the dessert, the
cannolis.
It was something Italian, obviously. That one I remember perfectly.
I had forgotten about that one.
Yeah, that one ran for a while. But yeah, no, the roller coaster with the popcorn.
Yes,
the concession stand is still open. Welcome to AMC Theater.
And I miss the little film guy from AMC.
Mm-hmm. It was back in the day. It was Wilmeco.
Yes,
Wilmeco Theaters. Well, Regal Cinemas is still around.
Yeah, Cobb.
Cobb is Cobb still around?
I don't know. I don't know if Cobb's became Regal.
And AMC.
Yeah, yeah. That was like the three. That's it.
Wilmeco, I don't know, went to, I don't know, another theater company.
That was just a hard word to say.
Wilmeco.
Yeah, it wasn't going to last. Nobody's going to, let's go to Wilmeco.
I think the one that everybody said the most, especially down here in Miami, Vamos a Kendall 9.
Oh, yeah. Which, actually, wasn't Kendall 9 a Wilmeco?
It was.
But nobody said Wilmeco because down here, good luck.
Do you know what's so sad? This is one of those things that, like, these little nuggets of joy that just remind you that you're not a teenager anymore.
Oh, God. I'm about to get sad.
Kids now, it's not that they don't even know. They can't even imagine what it was to call movie phone.
Oh, it's not even a concept.
Thank you for calling movie phone. for locations and showtimes, please press 1. And then they'll put an ad. Don't walk. Don't run. And whatever you do, don't scream. Screen 2 now playing at Kendall 9 for showtimes and locations. Please press 1.
See, he's out of a job now. I mean, he's been out of a job for a while, but
I don't know why this reminded me. Oh, man, we're going down that rabbit hole we go in here sometimes. I don't know why this reminded me when cell phone carriers all had a personality. Like T-Mobile was Catherine Zeta-Jones. Verizon was the guy in the trench coat.
Okay.
Who was Sprint?
Wasn't it Jamie Lee Curtis at one point?
Was it? Singular was the little orange guy.
Yes, the little orange guy. Was it Jamie Lee Curtis? Was she? Or was she just shitting her pants with a yogurt?
I forgot who I was talking to. This was a while ago that I told them, do you realize that every single phone carrier has a color? Sprint is yellow, Verizon is red, T-Mobile's magenta, and AT&T's blue. And I remember this person, like, it blew their mind.
I not only knew that, but when I first started at TracFone, every single ad based on what because it was prepaid, so prepaid worked off of other people's towers. Mm-hmm. Whatever towers were aligned for that one, you had the little map showing the different colors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you knew.
I mean, obviously that's intentional.
Right. Yeah.
That's not a coincidence. Yeah. But I remember like the person I was talking to, it blew their mind. Like, bro, yeah, each one of them has a color. And I'm like, no shit. Like,
brand identity, everybody.
But you know what, though? The thing with the colors, that's like, it's very much like...
Oh, and they were very distinct colors.
Yeah, I mean, you go into a T-Mobile, it's like pink everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm surprised they didn't sponsor Barbie.
AT&T, that would have been a good sponsorship deal. AT&T, especially at night, it's like this blue, like...
It's almost like an alien is going to get you.
Yeah, so it's like... We miss Sprint Nextel. Do we?
We do. Well, they were my client at one point. So,
yeah,
so
my first cell phone was from Sprint.
I think my first one was... Wait, well, before it was T-Mobile, what was it? It was something else.
Primeco.
Okay. No, then it was T-Mobile.
A lot of people now are like, whoa, we haven't thought about that in a while, Primeco.
Way back. That's, you know...
And before it was AT&T, it was Singular.
Yes.
Verizon, I don't remember what used to be Verizon.
No. I think it might have always just been Verizon. Like, I think it just... came out as Verizon.
Wait, who was Sprint spokesperson? It was a person. Because I remember the only one that didn't have a person was Singular.
I don't know why. I think it was Jamie Lee Curtis. Hold on. I need to look this up now. I'm literally like, just I'm going to do this live on air. Who was the Sprint spokesperson? Because my fat fingers sometimes... Okay, no, not the guy who used to be from the Verizon.
Was it the Dell guy?
No, it's the guy. Well, okay, the Sprint guy who used to be the Verizon guy. Yeah, no, this is not.
No. I remember that.
No, this is too modern.
When it was Catherine Zeta-Jones with T-Mobile, their slogan was "Get More."
That's right. That's right. That was before she was an Academy Award winner.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I can't find it right now, but I will.
Well, Pedro Primos, if you remember who the Sprint spokesperson was. Yes.
Tienen tarea.
Yeah. So anyway, something I wanted to mention this week, which I had posted on my personal Instagram this week, were the Billboard charts. I wanted to talk about that for a little bit.
Which we've talked about before here.
Yeah, but this week it was like one of those moments that you were like, what? So the Billboard releases their charts every Thursday. Well, the charts are officially on Thursday, but the information is released on Tuesday. And this week, excuse me, the all top 10 songs on the Billboard Hot 100 are from Taylor Swift's album. And I posted something on Instagram, on my personal Instagram, DJBorgis19 at Instagram. I posted that. You know, she's not the only one that has done that. Right. She's done that in previous records. I think that's happened with Beyonce, with Drake.
BTS,
BTS. That the fandoms do a streaming campaign and they get all the songs generally from the album because every song can be streamed individually.
Right.
They get all these songs, enough streams, that they're able to chart not only in the Billboard Hot 100, but in the top 10. So now all these people will have X amount of top 10s connected to their name in terms of their Billboard chart achievements.
Right.
And, you know, I said something along the lines on my personal Instagram that that takes away the relevance of a number one song. Because if a number one song now can be manipulated by a fandom, you know, and they do this, they will put on, they'll go on Twitter, they'll go on Instagram, like, hey, today from this time to this time, stream this song on, you know, all the streamers on Spotify, you know, whatever,
YouTube.
And they purposely do this, hence Taylor Swift's, the top 10 album songs on the Billboard Hot 100 are from Taylor Swift. And, you know, I was very intentional in saying that it's nothing against Taylor Swift. I actually like Taylor Swift. But I think that when you can manipulate the charts to this degree, that now the songs that are in the top 10 are songs that are streamed over and over and over by a fandom and are not representative of what people are actually on the general, not a fan base, not a certain demographic, what the general populace is listening to. If it doesn't portray what that, again, general populace is listening to, then what is the importance and what is the relevance now of the Billboard charts? Because now you'll have number one songs and songs on the top 10 that don't mean anything. That it's like, what, you know, nobody knows these songs other than the fandoms or people that really enjoy, you know, are fans of these people. It doesn't mean anything because I can go right now. And I actually wanted to do this for this episode, but I time fell short on time. I wanted to go through like the last 20 years, like the top 10 songs for like this week for the last 20 years. Yeah. And I bet you that we would probably know most of them, right? Even if you don't like the song.
But you know it.
But you know it.
Right.
You know, even if you don't like the song, because it was songs that were everywhere. They were on radio, they were on TV, they were on MTV and all that. So what do you think about that? I think it's just, it's losing, because then it's taking away from the achievement of people that have, you know, all these top 10s, all these number ones that did it the old-fashioned way, that you had to go and buy their record or buy the single. You had to go and request a song on radio. You
had to call.
You had to call,
yeah.
Right? You had to, MTV would put it on rotation. You know, so there was an effort made, a very intentional effort by people to buy and purchase this music and to consume it. Whereas now it's like, okay, we're just going to manipulate this and play it over and over and over and over again in a loop. And then it's going to get numbers. So,
yeah, I mean, look, you know where I stand on this. I've said it many a time on this show. The Billboard chart sadly means nothing anymore.
Yeah.
It means nothing. Last year, Billboard had their women, they do every year, women in music thing. And I mentioned this on the show. It was SZA, who I like. SZA, I like SZA's music. I listen to her music. Before they introduced her, there, you know, the whole this is an artist, blah blah. It was like, you know, oh, and every single one of her albums, the songs on every single one of her albums has charted in the top, you know, whatever. And I'm like, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything, because all that means is that you're like you said, your fans are able to coordinate. Your right. fans are able to coordinate an effort, right?
Right.
Great. But are you really part of the music, the musical cultural conversation to a bigger degree? Mm-hmm. No. And I think it's what we've talked about, you know, in a different, you know, perspective. It's this echo chamber thing, mm-hmm. right? Where now, because your fandom is talking about you amongst themselves, you're on the Billboard charts, and now it's like, oh, but I'm the biggest thing out there. Well, you're really not, because the general populace does not know it who you it are.
And I mean, look, these are popular singers, because obviously Taylor Swift, Drake, Beyonce, BTS, I mean, these are world acts that are huge, huge right. singers. So it's not even taking away from their popularity. These are people that even probably without the fandom streaming this over and over and over again could achieve very respectable numbers.
Singles. Could right. achieve numbers,
right? But
if we put the playing field similar as it was in the past,
right? Even without the help of the fandoms, these are established artists that have a very big following, that are very successful, that are huge names in music, that could probably reach high levels of success even without the fandoms mm-hmm. doing this over and over again. I was mentioning to you earlier when we were talking about this. I actually looked it up. Drake has like 370 songs that have charted on the Billboard Hot 100. And I told you, I don't think Drake knows the 370 songs that he has on the Billboard Hot 100.
I'm assuming that it's also inclusive of songs that he's just like on.
Guest
like,
stars, like yeah. Featured. But the thing with Drake is that Drake is one of these people that he releases a lot of records. Like, he'll release records unannounced and all that. So then what happens when he releases like a 10 to 15 track record? Every song charts on the Billboard Hot 100, kind of what happened with Taylor Swift.
Okay.
So when you release a lot of records, just think, if you release 10 records and each record has between 12 to 100 to 15 songs, that's between 120 to 150 songs that right. you have now charted.
Right.
Right? So
it's a numbers game.
Or if you do a remix, or you're a featured artist and all that. So, I mean, 370 like entries on the that's Billboard awesome. Hot 100, I mean...
That's like, insane.
Like, not even freaking like Michael Jackson, Madonna, people that have had careers for like
40 years
have been able to achieve that. I mean, because the age of streaming. So wow. It's just, and again, it takes nothing away from them. I mean, again, I like Taylor Swift, so Swifties, don't come at me.
Yeah, but I just think it's... But it lessens the achievement as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
And I wanted to say something else about music, which I was mentioning to you a little bit earlier today, a little fun fact. So earlier this week... We're not Generation X, not Millennials, Zillennials. We're
like the Zillennials.
Yeah. Zillennials, yeah. Okay. This is Zillennials in us talking. Earlier this week, I read an article that I think it was Nelly was at. I think it was UF, I think, but it was a Florida school. And apparently, you know, we're talking about Nelly, you know, hot in here, Nelly. Although that's my least favorite song of Nelly.
But it's a banger.
You know, there was this article written sort of shaming Nelly that he had a concert at UF. I think it was UF, but again, it's a Florida school. So don't quote me on the UF part, but it was definitely a Florida school, not a South Florida school. Let me make that very clear. It was, we would have gotten the, we would have understood the assignment.
We would have done a live broadcast.
Yeah. And this article was sort of shaming him that, oh, Nelly has a concert at this university and nobody went to it. And I was like, bruh. That's not the flex you think it is, shaming Nelly. Nelly having a concert at a university and nobody going says something about that student body and that university and not Nelly. Because you know what? You can't deny that Nelly has the bops, man.
Yeah.
A lot of them. So if none of the students went, that's on you, boo. That's not on Nelly.
Get your story straight.
Yeah. And I was like, you think this was a flex, you know, shaming on Nelly, but it's not. It's not.
No, it's more of a statement on you.
Yeah. Somebody in the comment was like, if you would have done that in an HBCU, I'm like, damn straight. Wow. People know music. If you would have done that here in South Florida, it would have been pandemonium, like freaking yeah. Nelly, you know. You know, some people get it, some people don't, but the student body here didn't get it, and it's like, that's not on Nelly, boo. That's on you.
At all.
So are you thirsty?
I am thirsty. Are you ready for a sody pop?
I am ready for our last soda, everybody.
All right.
So last week you gave your last soda to an Instagram page.
Yes.
And I'm going to give one to an Instagram page this week. So again, you know, we live in hard times. We want to levity, as you said, and laugh. There's this Instagram page. I don't know how I discovered it, because this is not generally something I would seek, that it's karens.r.wild. So it's like, again, karens.r.wild on Instagram.
A-R-E.
Yeah. Yes, R.
Okay.
And it's sort of like Karen's wild, you know, on the wild, but getting their just desserts.
Oh,
yeah. That's amazing. Amazing. Y mira that I'm very good at, like, when I fall on Instagram rabbit hole, I'm like, stop. You've been on the phone for 10 minutes. Stop, stop, stop. The other day I was like, oh shit. I'm like, I've been looking at Karen's for like 20 minutes. What am I doing with my life? But you know, it made me stop thinking whatever I was thinking about. And it was just funny because, I mean, Karens are just terrible, and they get their just desserts here. Like, people stand up to them.
Oh.
Yeah.
In all forms, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what I thought was funny is that there were a few Karens who were, like, British. I'm like, there's international Karens.
Oh, there's Karens.
Yeah. 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 So, we don't have Karens. We just have cheap mosas.
Yeah, that's true. What would be a Latina Karen? Caro.
Okay, see, a Latina Karen and a Cuban Karen are not the same thing.
Okay, fair enough. But the name is what I'm...
No, to me it'll be like Zoraida.
Zoraida.
Or Xiomara. Oh, Xiomara.
Yeah, Xiomara has opinions.
Yeah. Yeah. Xiomara va a venir y te va a decir de todo el mundo en el barrio.
Yeah, Xiomara's gonna... Yeah, yeah. She's gonna put everything...
Y si se pone bravo contigo, te va a decir hasta del mar que te vas a morir.
Yeah, cuidado. No te tires donde no das pie.
Te canta las 40 Xiomara.
Oh, Xiomara. Xiomara gone wild.
Yeah. Xiomara's gone wild.
Lord.
That reminds me of something else. Okay, go on.
I'm sure it reminds you of a lot of things. So I'm going to keep mine short and sweet. So this week, I'm just going to give my last soda to something that I've been enjoying. So a couple weeks now, Disney Plus brought back the X-Men cartoon from the 90s. They're doing a sequel series, X-Men 97. And at first, it just kind of seemed like, oh, this is going to be a nostalgia grab. But they've been able to build on it in a way that is like just, it's all the mutant melodrama. It's like, there was an episode that was like, in my opinion, the best episode of television, and not just because it used Happy Nation by Ace of Base as like the propelling
Happy Nation. Yes. Living in a happy nation.
It even started to chart again because of
the thing,
because of X-Men 97.
Good, everybody good for was, that. Everybody maybe was looking get, for it. Maybe we'll get Ace of Base back.
Maybe we'll get, yeah, why not? Bring back Ace de Base. But I haven't seen this week's episode, but it's just every week is just fantastic. It's a parable, like, you know, for just the, you know, mutants are obviously a stand-in for groups that are always marginalized, and it's a whole thing. But the mutant melodrama of it all is, it's soapy, it's action, it's great, and I am just glad it's back, and I am super duper enjoying it.
Do you know what I laughed like an idiot this week? It was a meme. Laughed like an idiot. Now that you said X-Men, it was a picture of Halle Berry as Storm. Right?
Uh-huh.
And then the other, next to that picture, there was the same picture, but she had like a Hawaiian shirt. And then one was Storm, and the other one was Tropical Storm. I laughed like an idiot.
Okay, that's great, actually.
Okay, now that you said, you know, Happy Nation, yes, and all that, 30 years ago, 1994. Okay, you know a song we were probably jamming to right now? And I think it was actually right before summer that it charted on the Billboard Hot 100 at number one, and it was there for a while.
It was 94. I can't even venture a guess.
I got a new life. You would hardly recognize me. I'm so fine. How can a person like me...
Wow.
I saw the sign, and it opened up. You know what? I don't care.
I love them.
I don't care. You could laugh at me. You could tell me whatever. That album was awesome
from start to finish.
That album, you know, yeah, it's dated. We're talking about, well, in the US it was called The Sign.
Yes.
But in the rest of the world it's called Happy Nation. Mm-hmm. But it had the songs. It had The Sign. It had All That She Wants. And then it had the other one was
Don't Turn Around,
cause you're gonna see my heart breaking.
And then I like all the non-singles.
Yeah. Well, my favorite song from that album is Living in Danger.
Oh, that's
right. But for example, those are three songs. All That She Wants, Don't Turn Around, yep, and The Sign. That
you couldn't escape those songs.
You couldn't escape those songs, whether you like them or not.
Right.
Because mira, that song, All That She Wants, I don't care too much for that song. But those songs were everywhere. Why? Because back then, like, you know, those songs were huge. Yep. Like, you look... I've always been a real nerd about the Billboard charts. Like, you know this. Yeah. I would get the data of Billboard charts on Tuesdays. Like, that's how much I would anticipate the shit. And for years, I subscribed to Billboard Magazine, which is a super expensive subscription. Because I loved all this. And when you would look at all these Billboard charts, like, you knew all these songs. Yeah. Or you knew most of them. And now...
You'd heard of them.
Now, it's like, okay.
Yeah. Great, yeah. Track 72 on Taylor's album is number 5.
Sure. I mean, you know what would be funny? You know what would be funny? If, like, intros were to chart.
Oh, my God. Janet Jackson
would be the queen of that.
Can we start a campaign? I don't even want all of them. Yeah. Just to have the one where she's like, Bacha, Blanche,
from Janet Jackson. Yeah. I mean, for those of you who are Janet Jackson fans, so something that Janet Jackson is notorious for in most of her albums is that a lot of her songs have interludes, right? Mm-hmm. So when you listen to it in the cohesiveness of the album, the interludes make complete sense. But when you have your iTunes on shuffle, just... It comes out randomly. Some of these interludes are like, what?
You know what would be great is if, like, you know, you hear, like, her one interlude where it's just like, you know, be a good boy and put this on. But then it's shuffled into, like, No Le Pega La Negra. Like, just, you know, like, just totally nothing to do with it.
What was that the interlude for? Be a good boy and put this on.
Oh, you're going to kill me. Was it Throb?
Yeah, no.
No.
If. Yeah. She has this one, we have the kind of morning where... No, we have the kind of night where morning comes too soon. We use the light of a flickering candle across the room to make the shadows only one thing can make. Love. Like a moth to a flame burned by the fire. That's why when you... No. You know what, though? That... Actually, it's so funny that I mentioned that one because I remember some time ago that I was listening to, like, some hardcore rap.
And then some Janet intro.
I don't know what it was. It was like hardcore rap. And then it ended and that intro came on. We have the kind of night where money comes to soon.
I mean, maybe.
And then, I don't know, something like Metallica came on after that. You know?
I think Janet interludes should only be listened to on shuffle.
People do that for fun. Yeah. Like, just download Janet Jackson's interludes. Like, all her albums have interludes.
Yeah, you have choices.
They have interludes and outros sometimes.
Yes, that's true.
I just play it randomly. On your playlist.
Which is the one that has, like, the submarine alarm?
I think it's your, because when you said you're right, Blanche, you are. It's like, fasten your seatbelts.
Had a couple interludes on the Oops album.
Mm-hmm. That's, like, and then there was.
Wait.
You know you want me.
Early in the morning.
Because it would start. And then you hear the door open. You know you want me.
You know, I'm sure other people do interludes, but for some reason, Janet's are just the ones that, like, just they stick
because there's so many of them.
There's so many. That's true.
The Janet album has 27 tracks. That's
half
why
of them
when Cowboy Carter came out now, people are like, "Oh, she has 20 something tracks." I'm like, Boy, Janet Jackson had 27 tracks on the Janet album. 27 tracks. Like, I remember my CD player had like a little grid of squares where the tracks would come out. They didn't fit. And I'm like, she doesn't have 27 songs. She has like 14 songs and like 14
interludes.
And then she has some interludes that it's just like wind.
Oh, yeah. Rain. Before, again, it's just rain.
No, she has another one, actually, which is another. It's a great interlude to come up out of nowhere. She has one towards the end of the Janet album when it's like the rain suite. That it's like all these romantic sexual songs. She has an interlude that goes that it's like rain. Uh-huh. And then she goes out of nowhere. She goes, "Are you still up?"
That's scary, actually, if you think about it. Like, if you're not paying attention.
And then there's another interlude after that. It says, "Sweet dreams."
Janet can be creepy as fuck, y'all.
And then in the Discipline album, the interludes are her talking to Kyoko, which is like her definition of Siri. So it's like, "Kyoko, play my favorite song." And then, "Okay, Miss Janet." Oh, it's great. Like, it's great, great. I mean, again, listeners, if you like Janet Jackson and you have her record, just put the interludes in your playlist and like you'll thank us later.
You will not be disappointed. Shuffle that shit.
Okay. We could talk about interludes all day long. So anyway, everybody, we hope you listened, laughed, and learned. And as always, remember to grab your croqueta, your pastelito, your cafecito, and your Janet Jackson album.
Yes.
Grab your interlude. And thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Cuídense, mi gente. Bye.
Pero Let Me Tell You is co-hosted by Darian Borges and Ismael Llano, produced by Ismael Llano, and our theme, Pero Let Me Tell You Freestyle, is composed by Michael Angelo Lomlaplex, the official gay guy. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.